The theme of my podcast is property investment, success and money. But today's show is more about you. If you're like many Australians, you're sick of COVID. And by that, I don't mean you're sick with COVID, but you're sick of the limitations, the restrictions, the lockdowns. You're sick of the inability to get on with your life or your investing or your business. Now, I know many of us are feeling angry, cross or frustrated. And that's why today I'm having a chat with Rhonda Britton, who's a repeat Oprah guest, a TEDx speaker and an Emmy Award winner. And even if you're coping well with COVID, you're going to love this chat today, as I'm sure Rhonda will give you some ideas to make your life even better. Now, just to make things clear, Rhonda Britton is not just another American rah-rah motivational speaker, but she's the real deal, as you'll find out in my chat with her today. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
It's my pleasure to be chatting with Rhonda Britton, the founder of Fearless Living Institute. Now, Rhonda's a repeat Oprah guest, a TEDx speaker, an Emmy Award winner, and she's devoted her life to one thing, to teaching you to master fear. Rhonda's presented two sessions for my team at Metropole over the last month, and my team was so taken, so inspired by her message, I invited Rhonda to pass on her message to you through this podcast. Currently, many of us are being challenged by lockdowns, by restrictions, by uncertainty. We're worried, we're scared, we're stressed, and we're continuously being bombarded by negative messages in the media. Now, this too shall pass. We know that. We know there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's most likely when 80% of Australians are going to be vaccinated. But we're not really sure about the timing of this. We're not really sure is life going to get back to normal. So how do we cope between now and then? Well, that's what I want to ask Rhonda Britton. Welcome, Rhonda.
Thank you, Michael. So glad to be here.
Now, Rhonda, I believe it's really important for us to know who you're listening to, who's giving us advice, why you're able to help us through these more challenging times. So before I ask you to give us some tips about how to work through the experiences we're going through at the moment, can you tell us a little bit about your history and why you're qualified to help us?
Well, that is so kind of you. And I love that you care about the stories of your guests. That just talks about your integrity. So I want to thank you for that. And I'm just going to tell you about the worst day of my life. I'm sure we all have so many stories that we could, you know, pull out as our stripes of why we do what we do. But really, mine started when I was 14 years old. And it was Father's Day and my parents were divorcing and my father's coming to take us out to brunch. And, you know, he comes to the house, come on, hurry up kids. And my sisters are in the bathroom and me and my mom start walking outside. And as me and my mom walk outside, my dad says he's going to get his coat from his car. And this coat was a tan Naga hide. I don't know if you remember good old Naga hide, Michael, you know,
it's a big thing.
Back then, leisure suit coat, right? And as he goes to his trunk, opens the trunk and gets his coat, I notice he does not grab a coat, but he has grabbed a gun and he starts screaming at my mother, "You made me do this. You made me do this." And he fires. Now I start screaming, "What are you doing, Dad? What are you doing?" And he cocks the gun, points it at me, and absolutely, I believe I'm next. My father and I look at each other. We blink, we stare. And then my mother, literally with her last breath, sees that gun in my face and screams, "No, don't." And my father, realizing my mother is still alive, takes that bullet intended for me and shoots my mother a second time. And that second bullet goes to my mother's abdomen, out her back, lands in the car horn. And for the next 20 minutes, all I heard was, and you know, I don't know how anybody else would respond to that moment, because in 2 minutes, I witnessed my father murder my mother and committing suicide in front of me. But this is what I did, Michael. I blamed myself, right? I was the only one out there. I was physically the only one that could have stopped it. And I did nothing heroic. I didn't jump in front of my mother. I didn't sacrifice myself, right? I didn't grab the gun. I didn't kick my father in the shins, right? I didn't, you know, run back in the house and dial 911, even though 911 didn't exist back then, right? So it's like I did nothing but stop and go, "Stop, Dad, stop." And that moment, I like to say, it's easiest to think of that I split in two, the external me and the internal me. The external me, I was a straight A student, got a scholarship for college, did really well. You know, everybody thought, oh, Rhonda, she's fine. And I pretended I was fine. But internally, I had self-doubt. I didn't get to be happy because you don't get to be happy when you witness your mother being murdered. That just goes away. No happiness for you. And confidence and self-doubt. And, you know, I really just felt like I was not worthy to have a life that my soul intended. And so for the next 20 years, even though on the outside, I was doing everything quote unquote right, you know, I tried to kill myself 3 times. I became an alcoholic. I got 3 DUIs, and the third DUI, they put me in jail for a while. And it was that third suicide attempt, Michael, when I did not die again. When I remember they put me in the psychiatric ward, and I'm in the psychiatric ward. They evaluate me, see if I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. They let me go home. And I go home to this little tiny studio apartment in Los Angeles, California, where I don't know a soul, right? I just moved there recently. I didn't know a soul. And now, you know, during those 20 years, I went to workshops, books. I did everything right. Like I said, I did everything right. Therapy, workshops, you name it. And I remember sitting in my little tiny studio apartment, Michael, with nothing to my name and my third suicide attempt and jail time, and realizing that no matter how many tools I received, no matter what I learned from those books and those workshops and that therapy, they weren't taking away the fundamental feeling that I was not good enough. They weren't healing my wound. They weren't getting me through to the other side. They were giving me information. They were educating me. They were supporting me, but it never broke through that there was nothing wrong with me. And I remember during this time, as I started to really dive into what is wrong with me, what came through me over and over again was the word fear. Just kept coming up, fear, 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 fear. And I was not somebody who was afraid. Like if you would have said to me, are you afraid? I'm from Upper Michigan. I'm finished. We aren't afraid and we don't feel, Michael. So there's no, I'm scared or I'm, you know, if you would have said to me, are you scared? I'd been like, no, right? But really the people that say no the most are probably the ones that are stuffing their fear far down, because everybody feels fear, right? Everybody feels fear, whether they know it or not. And so I started really embracing this word that I had shunned my entire life and started really diving into what fear was and how was it running my life. And it became my life's purpose. It became my passion. It became the thing that I do and love to do. I changed my own life. And then I've changed thousands and thousands of people's lives. Because what I did is I started to understand how fear really works in the practical sense, not just from a neuroscience perspective, which of course, obviously I studied that and know, understand from the biological point, but more importantly, how it really shows up in our lives, your life, my life. And I named something called the wheel of fear and the wheel of freedom. And your wheel of fear is different than mine. The way you do fear is different than the way I do fear. We all do it a little bit differently based on our history, based on how we grew up, based on our past experiences, et cetera. So that became my passion. How can one help themselves and identify for themselves the thing that they're most afraid of, the fear, the really the core fear they have, so they can transcend it and never be stopped by it again?
Fantastic. And unfortunately, you had to learn that over quite a long period of time. I know that you're helping people not go through so many years of difficulty before they overcome their fears. In Australia and around the world at the moment, people have got fears, and boy, their problems today, our problems are nothing like what you experienced. But to them, their fears are real. To them, we're having job challenges, some people economic challenges, some health challenges, others just the challenge of being locked down and not being able to get out, see family, friends.
Loneliness, right?
And I think the other thing is a lot of people feel they've lost control of their lives, Rhonda. What advice would you have for them?
First of all, the first thing that I want to say is it did take me 20 years to change my life because I didn't have any help, right? I didn't have any help of somebody guiding me through fear. And that's why I do what I do, because nobody has to take 20 years. I remember a client saying to me, she took a 3-day workshop with me, right? And she goes, okay, you've taught me more in 3 days than I have had a therapy for 30 years. And that's the point, right? Is to contract time, right? To stuff time into a smaller box. And so when you're talking about the fear that we all as a world are experiencing on so many levels, the overwhelm, the job insecurity, the feeling of out of control, the overwhelm, you know, the first thing to realize is that, you know, where are we in control and where aren't we in control, right? What do we have control of and what don't we have control of? And also, you know, how does fear work? You know, one of the things that I like people to understand is, you know, your neurobiology, you're wired to repeat the past. You're wired to look in the past for a solution to the present. So we are literally wired to do that. And oh, by the way, the brain doesn't know the difference between imagination and reality, right? And we use that in our visioning or our law of attraction, right? The secret, we do all that. But it impacts us beyond when we're doing that, right? It impacts us every single moment of every single day. So, you know, you have an opportunity to decide, well, wait a minute, what do I have control of and what don't I have control of? And that's that question in and of itself is a hard one for many people to answer because they want to have control over the things that aren't in their control. And when we feel like we can't control, right? We can't control what we can't control. That's when so many of us feel out of control. But in fact, you can gain back control by taking back the control of what you do have. So I ask my clients to actually do a really quick exercise, if I may. It's just, you know, grab a piece of paper, do two columns. On the one hand side, on the left hand side, go ahead and write the word control on top. And on the right hand side, write the word no control. And just start over the next, you know, half hour, whether it's a week, 3 days, give me a few days, and just keep track of all the things you have control over and things you don't have control over. Now, this is the secret. Of all the things you have control over, I want you to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, I am knocking this out of the park. I am doing it out of 10 out of 10. I'm amazing with this versus a 1. And what I've noticed with my clients when they feel out of control is the things they can control, they're not necessarily controlling either, right? They feel so out of control with the other things, they give up control about the things where they could really have personal responsibility and ownership. So rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 and be honest with yourself. How much are you giving of yourself? How much skill are you giving to that issue, that challenge, that problem? How much self-reliance? How much sovereignty? How much resilience? How much effort, right? And ask yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. And if those numbers on the control thing are under 5 and you got a whole bunch under 5, imagine now you've got all these other things out of control. And now the things you have control, you're doing under a 5. You're going to feel maybe hopeless. You're going to feel maybe a little depressed. You're going to feel out of control. And you can actually start taking control back where you can. And when you do, the things you have no control over become less in your face. They become less important, right? Because you are making a dent in your life with the things that you do have power over. And what we're wanting to do is have power over the things that aren't in our control. And they're not meant to be in your control. They're not yours to control. And so there we have to learn how to let go, Michael, let go and release so that we can be responsible for what is ours to do and let go of the things that are not.
That's some really, really good advice. Now, your programs and your books talk about fearless living. Is it really possible to have fearless living, living without fear?
Well, you asked a great question, and many people think that fearless living means you're never going to have fear again. And we are wired for fear. Our whole being is wired for fear. So it's not about getting rid of fear. It's about having mastery over it. It's about working through it. It's about recognizing and seeing it for what it is rather than getting tricked by it. So for instance, you know, most people don't even know how their fear shows up. So for instance, procrastination, right? Many people, oh, I'm procrastinating. Well, you know, Michael, we don't procrastinate unless there's a fear underneath. Oh, I'm overwhelmed. We don't get overwhelmed without a fear underneath. Oh, I'm having anxiety. We don't get anxious without a fear underneath, right? I'm comparing, I'm competing, I'm complaining. We don't do those things without a fear underneath. Blaming, we don't do that without a fear underneath. So there's a fear driving those behaviors. There's a fear driving those thoughts. And instead what we do is, oh, I'm procrastinating. I'm wrong. I'm bad. There's something wrong with me. If I just get off my butt and we beat ourselves up, put ourselves down, and call it a character defect or call it like, oh God, what's wrong with me? Instead of going, wow, okay, wait a minute. Am I a procrastinator? No, not if you're living your true life. Not if you're living from your true essence. None of us are procrastinators. It's not who we are, right? Because we have permission when we are living true to ourselves to let go of things and then to claim things, right? But when we are thinking we better do something or we should do something or we got to do something, and then we're driven by fear, that causes us to procrastinate. So when you can see procrastination as a fear response, as you can see, if you can see overwhelm as a fear response, right? If you can see the things that you think are your problems as a fear response, then everything comes back into your own personal power. right? Because you're the one that's in charge of, okay, wait a minute, what do I want to do with this fear? How do I want to identify this fear? What do I want to say to myself when I have this fear, right? And this is what I do with my clients, help them identify that core fear so they know what to do. But most of us just think, you know, beat ourselves up and what's wrong with me? Why can't I get it together? Sweetheart, you're just afraid.
Now, you've mentioned your clients a couple of times, and while my audience is worldwide, and I see that from the downloads, a lot of them are in Australia, but we are going to give them an opportunity to get one of your programs. And I normally do that at the end, but because I bet people are already waiting, wanting to hear, I'm going to find a bit more about Rhonda. Let's tell them about it now. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes and we'll mention it again at the end. But Rhonda, you actually have a link where they can find out more about this and how they can actually take some practical steps, Rhonda.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of my favorite exercises in the world of fearless living is called stretch, risk, or die, Michael. Stretch, risk, or die. And that is what I'd love to gift you and your listeners today. So it's fearlessliving.org/risk, R-I-S-K. And what the exercise is, I'll just give you a brief, just a very brief, because I want you to go and actually watch the videos. They're just, you know, like 3 50-minute videos, really quick. There's templates, there's worksheets, there's everything you need.
Fantastic.
Because really one of the first things that I want people to do, Michael, is start actually identifying their fear responses, identifying their symptoms of fear. Now, people are like, well, God, I don't have too many. You know, I only have this one. It's like, no. If you think you only have one fear response, you're being ignorant, right? I want you to actually have as many fear responses as possible, Michael, because the more you can identify, the quicker you can identify fear.
So it's okay to be scared.
It's totally okay to be scared. If you can't see it, if you can't feel it, if you can't claim it, you can't do anything about it. Right. And then it becomes a judgment on yourself because you think there's something wrong with you. Right. I mean, that's where I lived most of my life. I thought there was something wrong with me. Right. I really thought there was something wrong with me. I mean, I thought I was crazy. I thought I was stupid. I thought I was worthless. I thought I was not enough. I actually believed all those things about me. I thought I wasn't creative. I mean, I think about it now and how much fear lied to me. For over 30 years of my life, it told my story for me. And I listened to it because I could not separate it from me. I thought it was me. And what we do in Fearless Living is we kind of separate you from your fear so you can have you can see it outside of yourself and go, okay, that's what I do when I'm afraid. That's what I think when I'm afraid. If I was being true to my nature, if I was living from my essential self, if I was living the life my soul intended, I wouldn't think that. I wouldn't feel that. That wouldn't be how I would respond. So we want to start helping you, supporting you, and seeing how you do respond when you're afraid. And again, it's not a fear like, oh my God, I'm going to die today. It's just literally a new thought, a new risk, a new creation, all of those things, a new love, a potential breakup, all of those things, loss, all of those things are going to bring up fear naturally, because fear's only job is to keep you safe. And that's how the brain is wired. So anytime something changes, Michael, anything, there's even a hint of change, even though on one level we may be excited, inside fear is going, oh no, oh no, oh no, what's he doing? What's he doing? Wait a second. And then it makes you doubt and it makes you wonder and it makes you slow down and it makes you stop. And then all of a sudden you've got this idea and you're sitting on it for a year, 2 years, 5 years. And you say, well, one of these days, and you never get to it. And it's eating you up inside, right? So this is what I invite people to do. So the stretch, risk, and die exercise, I'll just quickly describe it, is in the middle, you're going to have it's like a target. And in the middle is your comfort zone. We all know what the comfort zone is. We've all understood it. Comfort zone is what you know, it's what you're comfortable with. May not be happy, but you're comfortable. A circle around the comfort zone is what we call the stretch zone. These are the things that you need to stretch in order to take that risk. The next circle is the risk zone. And then outside the risk is the die zone. And most people, Michael, think that the things, the risks they want to take, the challenges they face, the dreams they have are literally just, well, that's hard, that's easy, and they name it one thing. In actuality, every single step that you have to do in order to make a dream come true, to fulfill your intention, to live that goal, is filled with little stretch, risk, and dies. And it's not just stretch, risk, and dies from an intellectual point of view. More importantly, Michael, it's a stretch, risk, and die emotionally. And when we start recognizing the stretches, the risks, and the dies that we're taking from an emotional place, from those emotional risks, the fear of rejection, the fear of loss, the fear of safety, the fear of failure, the fear of success, the fear of loneliness, the fear of being judged, et cetera. When we can see those minute by minute, now what we're doing is taking back our lives. Now we're taking back our power. And so I'm actually going to show you how to do that with a goal of yours. So you're going to pick a goal. And then in the class that I'm going to be gifting you, is I'm going to help you break it down so you can start seeing, okay. This is what is happening. This is what I say. This is what I do. So you can start seeing it for what it is, and then you can make a decision, right? You can make a decision then. But if you don't see it, you can't make a decision. And you basically, me and everybody else, most likely, we have that negative self-talk. We beat ourselves up. We start, what's wrong with me, right? So we want to eliminate negative self-talk. I never want you to beat yourself up ever. And instead be able to identify how to move yourself forward using stretch, risk, and die. And this is the cool part, Michael. As you start taking stretch, risk, or dies, your comfort zone starts encompassing your stretch zone. And then your risk zone becomes your stretch zone. And then it gets bigger. And then your die zone is actually your stretch zone, right? And now you're creating a new risk and die zone. So it's not about a small comfort zone. I want your comfort zone to be as big as possible because I want you to be comfortable being uncomfortable, and I want you to be comfortable in your skin. And so when you get this self-mastery, you are comfortable, even if you're scared of bejeebers. You actually know what's happening, and you know, more importantly, what to do, what to think, and how you feel.
That makes sense, because at the moment people are feeling uncomfortable. They're not in their normal environment, and so that makes people uncomfortable. Is there a difference between genders? Are males worse at admitting that they've got fears, Rhonda?
You know, it's so funny that you asked me that, because I get asked questions all the time. You know, when I lived in London, people would say, well, do people in Britain have different fears than Americans? Or, you know, when I was in Australia, do Australians have different fears than Americans, right? And is the different genders? But I've been coaching for over 26 years. I've coached thousands and thousands and thousands of people all over the world. And a fear is a fear is a fear is a fear, period.
Do they have more difficulty admitting it, though, is I think the question I was asking. Because females are probably more prepared to ask for help. Males think, I should be able to cope with it myself. Sorry, that's my assessment.
Yeah. And, you know, I would think that many, many women out there would say, au contraire, it is very difficult for me to ask for help. When I teach a workshop that's 80% or more women, I ask how many people can ask for help. And of course, one person might raise their hand. And then I say, how many people like to give help? And of course, everybody raises their hand. So I think it's a fallacy that I get that men, quote unquote, have a more difficult time asking for help from a perception point of view. But I also think women have a very, very difficult, especially when if you own your own business and you're a high achiever and you want to make things happen and you're juggling a family and your business, you want to feel self-reliant. You want to have sovereignty. And so asking for help for too many people makes them feel weak, and it makes them feel like they can't handle it. And then they think that if they're weak and they can't handle it, then they don't deserve success or they can't get success, when in fact, the opposite is true. So, you know, the more that you can actually reach out and ask for help, the more successful you'll be and faster.
Now, I'm not sure if you have that overseas, but here we have an Are You Okay Day. You're actually meant to ask your friends, are you okay? Because there's a lot of people suffering from mental health issues. And it doesn't mean that you're crazy, does it, Rhonda?
No. Oh my gosh. Most people have some sort of mental health issue at some time in their life. And many people have reoccurring mental health issues. You know, being in a world that is so filled with sound, noise, responsibilities, goals, expectations, you know, wears on us. And so it's normal to start having doubt. It's normal to feel sad. It's normal to wonder if you can make it. Those are normal emotions when you're putting yourself in a pressure cooker. And so, but you're ultimately responsible for deciding when that pressure cooker, you're going to give that up. You're going to give that up, and you're actually going to start paying attention to what you need in order to stay centered, to stay clear, to stay powerful, to stay confident, to stay connected to yourself. So those are the things that come from your recognition that, wait a minute, there is nothing wrong with me. I'm just afraid, right? There's no shame in fear. It's just being willing to say, okay, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. that I feel weak. There's nothing wrong with me that I'm procrastinating. There's nothing wrong with me that I'm overwhelmed. It's just fear. And when we really can embrace that, then the answer, the antidote, is literally just a decision away.
That's comforting to know. Now, we're going to again leave a link for that program in the show notes, because some people will be traveling, and not that we can travel much in Australia at the moment, but they may be doing this, listening to this while they walk. But they're going to have lots of tips in your program. But what's one thing people can start introducing in their daily routine already to get one step closer to fearless living?
Yes. Well, I would love, my favorite exercise is acknowledgements. It's called acknowledgements. And you're going to write out, today I acknowledge myself for. Now, most people have a very difficult time acknowledging themselves because either one, they think it's going to give them a big head, or two, they didn't do it perfectly, or, you know, they didn't do it as much as they think they should, right? They have all these reasons to not give themselves credit for the things that they are doing, no matter how little, no matter how small, no matter how short, right? They want to, well, I should have done it three times as much, so I can't acknowledge myself. I should have done it better. I should have done it 2 weeks ago, so I can't acknowledge it now because it's 2 weeks late, right? All of that expectation, all of those false rules that we place upon ourselves actually continuously lowers our self-confidence, right? Continuously lowers our ability to break through. So what I ask my clients to do, and I ask you to do right now, is acknowledgement. So you're going to write out, today I acknowledge myself for, and you're going to acknowledge any movement forward that you make. It may be a new thought. It may be a new action. It may be allowing yourself to feel something for just another second longer. So a good example is, like, let's say I have a client, they say, oh God, I've been complaining so much lately. And I say, great, keep a complaining journal. Like, I want you to write down every complaint you have. And they go, okay. So they write them down. They come to me. They go, oh my God, I complained 100 times yesterday. And I go, okay. Again, well, fine with me. I don't care how many you complained. Just tell me how many you did. And I go, great, do it tomorrow. And now they're starting to do acknowledgements. They get it down to 99. Most people will go, but I'm still doing it 99. And you know what I care about? You did it one less. That's all I care about. So are you giving yourself the credit for the movement you're making, no matter how small, no matter how short, no matter how minimal, you know, I don't want you to minimize it. Literally, just today, I acknowledge myself for. The other tip is to frame it in the powerful positive, a powerful positive way. Do not use the word not. So today, I acknowledge myself for not complaining. Tell me what you did to replace it. What did you do instead of complain? Right? So we want to give ourselves credit for making the choice to do something different than maybe we would have done even 5 minutes ago. And I promise you, if you do acknowledgements five times a day, and in the beginning, maybe you get two, that's okay, but you want to build up to five a day. I promise you, after 3 days of doing acknowledgements, you will already, your confidence will increase and you'll start feeling more powerful and more able to take back your life.
That's a great tip, Rhonda. At the moment, we said people are feeling fear. Another emotion people are feeling is anger. They're cross with the government, the virus, their boss, the world. How do you handle anger in this environment?
That's really a great question because, you know, one of the things I say is every feeling we have, every value we hold, every belief can be in service to fear or freedom. So anger can be in service to freedom. So you can allow yourself to be angry through the eyes of, okay, I got to move this energy, because feelings are just energy. So you want to move that energy through you. But remember the exercise I gave earlier, which is control and no control. Sometimes we're having anger about the things we can't control. And then we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to step in and actually join that fight, actually to join that cause, to care about that thing? Because if we're not, then how can we support it so that we can feel like we're making a difference? So, you know, you have a huge opportunity when you're feeling anger. You know, like I think of Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr. did not change, you know, America because he wasn't angry. He changed it because he was really angry, right? Mahatma Gandhi, you know, even Jesus through the money changers, right? All our great leaders, our great philosophers at times get angry, and it's a motivating force, right? It moves us to finally take a stand somewhere. So are you using your anger to destroy your self-esteem, to destroy others around you, to minimize, to create more harm around your life and others? Or are you using that anger to fuel your energy, to fuel your passion, to fuel your motivation? So you actually have a choice on how to use that anger. Now, I have a funny little exercise that I could share, Michael, if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Okay, so it's this fun exercise that you can use with your anger. So, you know, when we get angry, Michael, I don't know about you, but when I get angry, I can be like, ah, you know, get off, shut up, right? You know, I can jump it around, you know. And I want you to take that same energy, that energy, and you're jumping up and down your house and you're pacing and you're slamming doors. I want you to take that same energy and use it. And instead of saying the thing that you like, I can't stand those people. Who do they think they are? Which are all those things that you're spewing out that aren't moving you into action. Instead, I want you to use your body, still be angry, allow that energy to move through you. But instead, out of your mouth, I want you to say powerful, positive statements. So, oh my God, the day is really great today. Oh gosh, good job. I'm flying high. This is amazing. My life is amazing, right? But you're using the rage, the anger, the frustration to actually fuel, first of all, to let it loose. You got to let it loose. You got to let it loose. Go run around the block. But as you're running around the block, you're going to say the thing that you want to be true, the things that you know that you that are true. And then what you're doing is you're actually creating neural pathways that now start translating anger from a negative emotion to actually a powerful, positive one that you can do something regenerative with, right? That you can grow with, that you can shift with. So that's what we want. We want to take our brain back. And the only way we do that is by making different choices. So are you going to be angry? Sure. Have I been angry? Sure. The world is angry. The world is done. The world's fatigued. The world's resentful. The world is pissed off, right? And then, okay, so where's that getting you? You know, how's that supporting you? Is that increasing your confidence or decreasing your confidence? Is it increasing your hopefulness or decreasing your or increasing your helplessness? Is it making you feel more powerful, less powerful? So these are all the questions that are yours to ask. And if they're getting you places that you don't want to go, you have a choice, right? You have a choice. And so I invite you to use that exercise to start using that anger. And remember, every feeling, every value is in service to fear or freedom. And you get to decide which one you're going to serve.
I think that's great to hear because I think a lot of people currently feel they don't have a choice. They don't have a say and how they're feeling is wrong. So I think what you've given us is permission to be angry, permission to be scared, permission to feel uncomfortable for a short time and then move on. Don't wallow in your fears because you do have a choice. The choice is yours. You have control.
Yeah, you have, you know, you have choice. And there are going to be feelings that, you know, maybe lingering, like if there's a loss, right? If you've lost somebody to COVID or you've lost some part of your business or something that's going on because of the worldwide COVID crisis, you know, and it does feel like we're out of control. Then care for yourself, nurture yourself, love yourself through it. You know, so our feelings are here. Feelings are neutral. Feelings are just feelings. Feelings are just energy. So how are you going to use them to support you? How are you going to use the essence of those feelings to energize you, to remind you who you are, the truth of who you are? There's no shame in feeling, you're right. And I love the word that you said earlier, Michael, permission. Yes, you have full permission to feel. You don't get to act out. You don't get to lash out, but you definitely get to feel.
Now, Rhonda, this is a very timely chat we're having for lots of people because of the challenges going on. We could go on for a long time, but instead we've given them, you've offered us, you've gifted us a great resource. So go to fearlessliving.org/risk. I'll leave a link in the show notes and you'll be able to get lots more from Rhonda, including your newsletter. And I know you always say when you offer this, oh, you can always unsubscribe. No, don't do that. Keep getting Rhonda's messages because you don't spam us. You don't spare, but I enjoy getting your regular messages and I very much appreciate how you've lifted me, our team. And now I hope thousands and thousands of Australians in this podcast. Thank you so much for your time, Rhonda.
Thank you. And remember, there's nothing wrong with you. It's only fear.
That's good. I really hope you enjoyed my chat with Rhonda today. Well, we didn't speak about money or property at all, did we? We spoke about you. And I think the gold that Rhonda gave in today's show is worth listening to again. So why not go back and listen to the show again at 1.5 times or 2 times speed? She said so many great things to help you. Now, by the way, you probably also know somebody who would benefit from this. So why not tell them about this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast or tell the world by leaving a review? I'd really appreciate that. I'll be back again real soon, twice a week with the Michael Yardney podcast, but you can catch me in between on social media. In particular, go to my private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update Facebook group and join me in my daily little jottings that I put down. I look forward to seeing you again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropol, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropol to help you?